extreme radio for extreme times. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640.
This is A View from Space. I'd like to welcome you in if you're driving around town right now listening to AM 640. I welcome you in. Or if you're at work listening right now to AM 640 via the AM 640 app, I welcome you in too. Or if you're listening right now on Shaw Direct on channel 865, I welcome you in also. Or if you're listening on your 3 or 4G personal communication device via that Stream the World software, I welcome you in too. Or maybe you're what some still call the best seat in the house, bar none, sitting in front of their Mac or their PC at home, logged on to 640toronto.com, search engines ready. I welcome you in. Wherever you are in the world, I welcome you in. This next election in the United States, of course, being dubbed as an historic first all-time ever election in America, where a woman leads a major party. In fact, some are even calling this up-and-coming American election to be the most important since 1932. What happened in 32? The important election of 1932 in the United States was when Franklin Delano Roosevelt's Democratic Party came to power by forming the New Deal coalition that united groups that had never, ever, ever voted for the Democratic Party to vote for FDR and his New Deal. Could this presidential election that's coming up November 8th to be an eerie premonition of what's to come? Yet another case of history repeating itself, this time with Donald Trump and the Republicans bringing different but likewise disgruntled groups of people together, just like FDR did in 1932 with his promise of a New Deal. People who never, ever voted Democrat in their life voted for FDR because of that New Deal. Will it happen? With this scenario happening again? By this New Deal being offered by this time a Republican, Donald Trump, and put Donald Trump, the king of debt, in the White House? While Illuminati-controlled mass media reports the official reason as being Trump unifying many disgruntled groups of people, getting them together, motivating them to vote, and winning. Now, here's something else that could happen, too, that figures hugely into this. The autumn equinox coming up. And if you'll recall, it was right at the spring equinox, more than a year ago now, when the first news on social media broke of what Hillary Clinton was about to do. And that was to announce that she was going to run for the presidency of the United States. It fits in exactly with the ritual of women rising up to personal power at the time of the spring equinox. Because you see, in the world of witchcraft, her announcement was pre-planned with her intentions to run, plus to make the announcement right at the spring equinox. It's all explained in the meaning of the word crone. Here's the meaning. The crone is a stock character in folklore and fairy tale, an old woman portrayed. In some stories, she's disagreeable, malicious, sinister, and often with magical or supernatural associations that can make her either helpful or obstructing. The crone is also an archetypal figure, a wise woman. As a character type, the crone shares characteristics with the hag. But in the occult, the male winter god begins his reign during the autumnal equinox coming up, known as Mabon in the witch witching world. This ritual that takes the power away from the woman at the autumnal equinox and gives it to the male god takes place this year, September 22nd, not far off. As a matter of fact, next Thursday. Could this be another premonition to come of the United States presidential election result? As I've said many times on AVFS and talk radio, AM 640, that Hillary Clinton is positioned very high in the hierarchy in the world of witchcraft. In the world. Her and her husband Bill both hold very high office in that coven. But Hillary holds an even higher office than Bill. The Clintons, Bill and Hillary, are not who the public perceives them to be. So it's no surprise to me that the elites have chosen a very high-placed witch in Hillary Clinton to run as the very first ever woman all time to compete for the presidency of the United States. Then lose, of course, in accordance with the autumnal equinox ritual. You see, there have been so many secrets surrounding the Clintons. For instance, no public medical records of Hillary exist. No public scrutiny of her emails in her job as Secretary of State. Bill Clinton's carousing with all kinds of women. No, the Clintons are not who the public perceives them to be. A lot of people, for instance, think Hillary Diane Rodham was born in Chicago, raised by a United Methodist family, first in Chicago and then from the age 3 in Park Ridge, Illinois. Her father, supposedly Hugh Ellsworth Rodham, and the mother, Dorothy M. Howell, both dead. But was that the real parents of Hillary Clinton? Just as everything else is a front, that's also a front. Same thing with Bill Clinton. I've said it many times on this radio show when Bill Clinton's name has come up as a topic on this show for some reason or another. Bill Clinton is a bastard child of the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers are the powerful banking cabal that runs North America. As the Rothschilds banking cabal runs Europe. All controlled by the crowned heads of Europe. These people put in these positions to get the power to take the world and shape it the way the elites want it shaped. So, you're going to hear some things in the next couple of hours that you never heard before about the Clintons. And some you have heard, but not in as quite detail as you'll hear tonight. Two states are involved here, the United States, Arkansas and New York State. Two very, very, very powerful, powerful states with the Clinton organization. This witchcraft coven that I say has the Clintons all wrapped up is really the Clinton Foundation. That's who it is. When Bill is just 7 years old, his family moves to Hope, Arkansas, to that longtime mob resort, Hot Springs, Arizona. Here, Al Capone is said to have had permanent rights to Suite 443 at the Arlington Hotel. Clinton's stepfather, and I said stepfather because this is not Bill Clinton's real father. his birth father. Clinton's stepfather was a gun-brandishing alcoholic who lost his life in a ditch, a car accident. And Hillary Clinton is not who they say she is, either. Now, during the Great Depression, which started in 1929, lasted through until the late 1930s, was the longest, deepest, and most widespread depression of the 20th century. The state of Arkansas, figuring prominently with the Clintons, was said to suffer more than any other state because of the collapse of the price of cotton worldwide. The state of Arkansas had only one alternative, and that would be to have to declare bankruptcy, which it did. And the Rockefeller banking syndicate acquired it at a bargain basement price. So during the Great Depression, the five billionaire Rockefeller brothers buy the entire state of Arkansas. By the way, they are situated and have their home base in New York State, the other very important state. Hillary Rodham, supposedly born in Chicago in Illinois, but ends up being the New York senator. Bill Clinton later rises to become the Attorney General of Arkansas, and then he is the senator from Arkansas. So the Rockefellers, five billionaire brothers, buy the entire state of Arkansas. On September of 1945, one of those five billionaire Rockefeller brothers, Winthrop, also known as William Jefferson Blythe III, married a woman from Hope, Arkansas, named Virginia Cassidy. After Winthrop Rockefeller's discharge from the U.S. Army in 1945, Virginia Cassidy was expecting his baby. And according to former President Bill Clinton, Virginia Cassidy was Bill's mother. And a 26-year-old man named William Jefferson Blythe III was his father. In Clinton's book, his autobiography, there are pictures in it that show a man in an army uniform. His name is shown as William Jefferson Blythe. The William Jefferson Blythe in the picture looks like a man who's close to, say, in his 40s. There's also a picture of Virginia Cassidy, his self-espoused mother. Clinton states in his book that those two were his parents. When I come back, an autobiography quote from Bill Clinton himself from his book, shedding a little more light on what's behind all of that. Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVFS, and I'm just getting started. I'm the guy to call Space. It's a view from space on Talk Radio AM 640. Communicate by email only. Spaceman at 640Toronto.com. One address, the other, space at 640Toronto.com. So back to the doppelganger. You heard a little bit about that this week. The lookalike that was supposedly out waving to the crowd, what would placate the voters of America, saying that Hillary Clinton looks fine. Well, yes, there was a double, but it was a long time ago, and I'll explain. Just as I'm about to explain right now about this conundrum of who Bill Clinton's father really was, because I contend both Clintons, Hillary and Bill, are in fact cousins and were fathered by two of the five Rockefeller sons. Now, in Clinton's book, as I said before the break, shows a man, army uniform, name is shown as William Jefferson Blythe, supposedly his father's name. In the picture, it looks like a man close to around, say 40 years old. There's also a picture of Virginia Cassidy. Clinton states in his book those were his father and his mother. And here's a quote from the autobiography of Bill Clinton himself, published in 2004, May 17th, 1946, it dates. After moving their furniture to their new home, Bill writes, "My father was driving from Chicago to Hope to get his wife late at night on Highway 60 outside of Sikeston, Missouri. He loses control of his car, a 62 Buick, when the right front tire blew out on a wet road. He was thrown clear of the car, in those days no seat belts, but landed in or crawled into a drainage ditch dug to reclaim swampland. Now this ditch held just 3 feet of water. When he was found, after a two-hour search, by the way, it says, his hand was grasping a branch above the water line. He had tried but failed to pull himself out," says the quote of the Clinton My Life autobiography book. "And when he was found, grasping a branch above the water line, tried to pull himself out but drowned. Only 28 years old. Married 2 years and 8 months, only 7 months of which was spent with the mother of Bill Clinton." That brief sketch is all I really know about my father, Bill Clinton states in that book. He was in his 20s when this man, William Jefferson Blythe, died. The William Jefferson Blythe picture in that book looks like a man closer to 40. Now, Bill Clinton's father was an Army veteran who repaired heavy equipment for the Army in Europe, it states, who drowned in 3 feet of water. In reality, the real father of President Clinton was sitting across from his mother at the same table. The man on the left in the picture up in the book of Virginia Cassidy, publishing the full photo, the man was on that was sitting on the left next to the woman named Rosalie Williams was in fact Winthrop Rockefeller, one of the 5 billionaire Rockefeller brothers. Bill Clinton's mother, Virginia Cassidy, publishes this full photo in her 1994 autobiography. But, who would have guessed it? Unfortunately, all copies of the full photo are now missing. You see, the Army career of Winthrop Rockefeller mirrored exactly what the career of the man known as William Jefferson Blythe, the father of Bill Clinton, stated by Bill Clinton, led. Winthrop Rockefeller was never in a combat situation in Europe, as his job was fixing heavy equipment. So, no one knows what Winthrop Rockefeller was really doing in the Army, but the man known as William Jefferson Blythe was given the job of repairing heavy equipment. In 1948, the philandering Winthrop Rockefeller, the runaround elite rich, son of Nelson Rockefeller, married a blonde bombshell named Barbara Bobo Sears. But that marriage ended in divorce in 1954. According to Barbara Sears' autobiography, the man named William Jefferson Blythe had 3 other wives before he even met her. So you see, there are two people here going by one person going by 2 names. Or assuming the identity of the William Jefferson Blythe is Winthrop Rockefeller. Here's a quote from To Hide the Bloodline. Here's a quote from Barbara Sears' book. "Many years later, my memory of Bill Blythe would be jolted by revelations after his son had become president. I say jolted, not shaken, not shattered, and probably surprisingly to many, not betrayed either. It appears that Bill had indeed been married before he met me, meaning Winthrop Rockefeller. He never told me that, nor did anyone in his family. So as the news accounts of his alleged three previous marriages come out, I admit I was hurt and confused. I just couldn't understand why I hadn't been told. That statement is just more proof that President Bill Clinton is the real son of the philandering Winthrop Rockefeller, who married that blonde bombshell, Barbara Sears, and said his name was William Jefferson Blythe, hiding again of the bloodline that the elites do so well. Winthrop Rockefeller was governor of Arkansas from January of 1967 to January of 71. And I put it to you like this. Bill's just a chip off the old block, Winthrop Rockefeller, his father, because Bill Clinton couldn't keep his hands off women either, just like Winthrop Rockefeller couldn't. And his life was really one long sex scandal after another. As for Hillary Clinton, she's also of the Rockefeller bloodline. Nelson Rockefeller is her bloodline biological father, but the identity of her real mother is still a real mystery. The Rockefellers, by the way, have owned New York State since John D. Rockefeller moved there from Ohio in way back 1897. More on the Clintons and the Rockefeller connection when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm Space. This is ABFS. I'm the guy to call Space. It's a view from Space. Talk Radio AM 640. It's the only show on the planet Earth that no one knows what time it really starts. But then I take a little solace in that. And here's where I get that solace. The truth is not very easy to find. Has to be dug deep for and uncovered. But the lies that go out and get into the Illuminati-controlled mass media are everywhere, abundant and accessible at any time. But a place like AVFS, Talk Radio AM 640, you'll find the truth. You have to dig for it. You have to look for it. You have to find it. And sometimes it's not on when you think it's on. As is the case tonight, as I am, going deep into the father and mother of Bill Clinton and the father and mother of one Hillary Clinton. One has already been president. The other is vying to become the first woman president. With the autumnal equinox coming up. And in the world of witchcraft in which they live, in the autumn equinox, the male is the one that takes over the power from the female for the next 6 months of the year. Then again in the spring equinox, the woman's power rises exactly when Hillary Rodham Clinton declared her candidacy, right at the spring equinox. Now, their parents are in question because I believe they are both from the Rockefeller bloodline. That's why they have such a power when it comes to, for instance, funding something. Donations just come roaring in. No one can out-fund the Clintons. No one. No one stands a chance. So where's the money coming from? It certainly isn't the Clintons. it's the ones who back them. They have been put in there in that power position by the Rockefeller family. Winthrop Rockefeller was the governor of Arkansas, which is where the Clinton family moved to when he was just seven, ended up being attorney general there, and then the governor was Bill Clinton. And as for New York State, well, New York State has been run by the Rockefeller group since, well, John D. moved there in 1897. They own it. So, what you hear about, and the official line about Bill Clinton and who his parents were, and Hillary's, very important this time with the election coming up in just a few weeks, Hillary's most probable birthplace is the state of New York. Or possibly Chicago, they had it right. I believe it was New York. But the exact time and place, in either one of those places, also still another mystery. Why? Well, they're hiding something. They have an official line, but it's not the true situation of what's happened. Both Rockefellers, Winthrop and Nelson, by the way, cremated after they died, immediately after their deaths, in order that their paternity could not be established. So the tracks have been covered up, exactly the way the Clintons have covered up neatly on every single scandal they've been involved in. Bill Clinton was even impeached, but then reinstated. Where do you think that power comes from? So both Rockefellers, Winthrop and Nelson, cremated immediately after their deaths in order that no one would find out that they're in fact the father of Hillary and Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton did so much damage to America. Supposedly the most favored president because everyone was rolling in money. Well, the Rockefellers again funding that whole situation, allowing that to be done. The banking cabal that runs America with Bill Clinton as their bastard child as president. Now also, Hillary Clinton, a bastard child of Nelson Rockefeller. That's who Hillary Clinton's biological father really is. As I said, the mother, the real mother, still a great mystery. Even where she was born. Now, what's incredibly, absolutely revealing is that Hillary spent a summer interning in California law firm owned by the husband of Jessica Mitford, the woman who was the driving force really behind the acceptance of cremation in the United States. The real Hillary Clinton, because there were two Hillary Clintons. Well, actually, there was two Hillary Rodhams. The real Hillary Rodham grew up in Park Ridge, a suburb of Chicago. Her parents, middle class, neither rich nor poor. And the real Hillary Rodham comes from the land of Lincoln. But that's the only thing they have in common is the name. These two people, known as Hillary Rodham and Hillary Rodham Clinton. Growing up during the Eisenhower era, Hillary Rodham, the original, was a normal Midwestern Christian girl in every way. She excelled academically and at sports. No pictures of her wearing glasses ever existed. The image that you see this person is the real Hillary's high school graduation yearbook photo. According to an autobiography written by the doppelganger Hillary, that's the one fathered by Nelson Rockefeller. She played on a softball team in the summer and skated on the ice in the wintertime. It says in the yearbook, played the girls' summer softball league throughout high school, and the last team she played for was sponsored by a local candy distributor. They wore white knee socks, black shorts, pink shirts in honor of their namesake, confection, Good and Plenty, name of the company. The Park Ridge kids traveled in packs to and from Hinckley Park, swimming in summer in the cold pool water and skating in winter on that big outdoor rink. That's all in the living history of Hillary Clinton in that autobiography. Now, in that same autobiography, Hillary claims that she was almost blind and had to be led around by the hand. This is fine with me because I usually felt the same way. Of course, I did make some effort to fit in, she wrote. I had enough adolescent vanity that I sometimes refused to wear the thick glasses that I needed since I was 9 to correct my terrible eyesight. My friend, starting in the 6th grade, Betsy Johnson, led me around like a seeing eye dog, she wrote. Sometimes I encountered classmates and failed to acknowledge them, not because I was stuck up, but because I didn't recognize them. I couldn't see them. I was in my 30s before I learned to wear soft contact lenses strong enough to correct my vision. All in the living history of Hillary Clinton. Now, it is impossible for the same person to have perfect eyesight and be almost blind at the same time. Hillary had a split personality. She was actually writing about two different lives and two different girls. What's more, without a big scholarship, Hillary's parents, the real Hillary Rodham's parents, could not afford the tuition at Wellesley, one of the most expensive colleges in all of the United Nations. Then she went to Yale. Ivy League for her education. There's no way the real Hillary Rodham's family could afford that. Because, you see, it wasn't their daughter who went to Wellesley. It was Nelson Rockefeller's family. Hillary. That went to that college under that other girl, Hillary Rodham's name, and took her story. The first appearance of the Dead Ringer was at Wellesley College in 1965, when the Hillary you see today, Rockefeller blood, went to college. The college is one of the most exclusive Seven Sisters colleges, and is one fertile ground for CIA recruitment, by the way, also, which Bill Clinton worked for at the very start in his career as a CIA informant. The real Hillary would never have applied to that school because she could never afford it. And even if she had, her chances of admittance, really, really remote. You'd have to have some huge financial backer putting your name forward. That's the only way you get ahead. And certainly the real Hillary Rodham did not have that financial backing. The real Hillary's parents could never have afforded to send their daughter to that school. And who knows what happened to the real Hillary Rodham. Sort of like who knows what happened to all of those dead bodies that trail the Clintons, known as the Clinton body count. I'm the guy to call space. It's a view from space on Talk Radio AM 640. Emails, please send them to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. And thank you so much for the ones that you've sent. A lot of them complaining tonight about the start time, so I'll just skip this. But there are two different Hillary Rodhams. I don't believe the first one is alive today. The one that is alive today, Hillary Rodham Clinton, that married Bill Clinton, a cousin, is also of the Rockefeller clan. Hillary Rodham Clinton's father, real father, birth father, Nelson Rockefeller. Bill Clinton's Winthrop Rockefeller. Answers a lot of questions, doesn't it, about, oh, say, the Whitewater scandal where there was a whole bunch of money coming from banks to pay off certain bills. Banks owned by the Rockefellers. Two states. Arkansas was bought by the Rockefellers. Bought. In the Depression. And the Rockefellers' home state, of course, is New York State, where both Hillary and Bill rose to the top. So, the dead ringer for the original Hillary Rodham, because there's no way that middle-class Hillary Rodham, the one that was born in Chicago and was raised with a family that officially is stated as Hillary Rodham Clinton's family. Well, she went on to study law at Yale in 1970, this dead ringer that replaced this person, usurped the identity of this Hillary Rodham, and became Hillary Rodham Clinton later. She started dating her cousin, Bill, during that same year, 70 to 71, when they went to Yale. And they're, like royalty, of course, put together for the express purpose of keeping the bloodline in the family and keeping the power and the money. During that same reel, the unreal Hillary Rodham interned at a law firm in California named Truffhoft, Walker, and Bernstein. That was definitely a dramatic about-face from her conservative Midwestern upbringing, we're told. Remember, Hillary spent a summer interning at a California law firm owned by the husband of Jessica Mitford. As a lawyer in training, the doppelganger Hillary, the one that we see today, the, let me call her the Hillary Rockefeller Clinton, spent her summer with Jessica and her husband Robert. Now here's a description of that event in the life of Hillary. Bill and I shared a small apartment near a big park not far from the University of California at Berkeley campus where the free speech movement started in 64. I spent most of my time working with Mal Bernstein, researching, writing legal motions, and briefs for a child custody case. Meanwhile, Bill explored Berkeley, Oakland, and San Francisco. That's from the book entitled Clinton, Living History. Another incredible event in the life of Hillary Rockefeller Rodham Clinton happened while she was still a student at Yale, enjoying the elite's life and education, and later, of course, position in the public eye. She played a vital role in her father's, Nelson Rockefeller's, conspiracy to impeach President Richard Nixon. You remember Watergate, of course. It was a successful conspiracy to force President Nixon out of office so that Nelson Rockefeller, the father of this doppelganger look-alike of the real Hillary Clinton, or Hillary Rodham, could replace him. Because, you see, the Rockefellers wanted the presidency. As I said, we'll never know what happened to the real Hillary Rodham. But suffice to say, she's not around today. Lawyer John Doerr represented Nelson Rockefeller at the hearings of the Watergate scandal. The doppelganger of the real Hillary, who is in fact Nelson Rockefeller's daughter, the one who married Bill Clinton, also a member of the elite Rockefeller bloodline, this second Hillary also played a vital role in the Watergate impeachment hearings. Nixon was impeached. So was Bill Clinton, but Bill Clinton was reinstated. It was overturned. Not so tricky dicky. Actually, Nixon resigned before he was impeached. When her own husband, Bill, was impeached, Hillary Rodham Clinton Rockefeller fought tooth and nail to save him from impeachment, and the two Rockefeller bloodline members of the second Hillary and Bill married October 11th, 1975, by a Methodist minister named Reverend Vic Nixon. That wedding ceremony took place in the living room of a house that they had just bought. The bride kept her pseudo-maiden name of Hillary Rodham, and with husband Bill in tow, the next step, of course, for Hillary Rodham Rockefeller and Bill was to capture the presidency, which had eluded her father, Nelson Rockefeller, for so long. It all started in January of 1993. That was the beginning. January of 1993, the beginning of 8 nightmarish years for the United States. It was just one scandal after another, and now well known, even infamous, is the phrase known as the Clinton body count. It began to multiply. So many deaths associated with the Clintons. It's just absolutely mind-blowing, is what it is. Now, just let me say that this list, which I'll get to, as many as I can get in tonight's abbreviated show, because, quite frankly, there are more dead people to talk about than this show can stay on the air for. And that list, now known as the Clinton body count, still is going on just lately, this year, 2016. I'll get to them. The Clinton body count continues. But what nobody realized at the time was that her husband's eight-year presidency was really just a dry run for her own shot at the presidency, first in 08, and now again in 2016. Are the Rockefellers going to be successful again to get one of their people in to the Oval Office? Because it seems to me that there is a concerted effort to keep them out. As you can already see as we close in on the autumnal equinox, when the male assumes the power and control, that Hillary Clinton, getting very close to it, collapses where the very two twin towers collapsed in New York State, owned by the Rockefellers, but can't attain the presidency, it seems. Hillary was actually co-president during Bill Clinton's two terms, you know. She sometimes ran the White House from behind the scenes while her husband spent time chasing women. A lot of the highlights of their nightmarish eight-year reign included the Oklahoma City bombing, Waco, the the death of Vince Foster, Ron Brown had that airplane crash, the impeachment scandal with Monica Lewinsky, and the bombing of Serbia in 1999. When I got to call space, it's a view from space. Talk radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. KB writes, and I picked this one out because basically it's the nicest way of putting it all. But they're all basically in the same vein that's rolling in tonight. You're on! I was really upset why they had sports on the air instead of you. Glad I checked back. So I've been talking about something quite important on this abbreviated show tonight. Had no idea I would be cut to just 2.5 hours. But my point is that Hillary Rodham Clinton is not the Hillary Rodham Clinton you think she is. And Bill Clinton is not the Bill Clinton you think he is. Because very strange things happen in the world that most people are unaware. And that is this. Those two people are in fact cousins. That's why there's no real relationship there. It's a bloodline having to marry in the bloodline kind of marriage. There's no love. Never was. It's about power and control. Winthrop Rockefeller is the father of Bill Clinton. Nelson Rockefeller is the father of Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, Nelson Rockefeller, who is her real father, stole this substitute scam from Genesis, chapter 27. Yes, I know, the all-compelling nine for those in witchcraft. It's beyond belief, but Baptist Nelson Rockefeller, inspired to use his daughter as a doppelganger to accede to possibly the presidency of the United States by reading the story of Jacob and Esau in the Holy Bible. Father Abraham had a couple of sons named Esau and Jacob. Esau was the firstborn, and the law of primogeniture demanded that he be an inheritor of the firstborn's blessing. But Jacob's mother, Rebecca, was shrewd and very cunning, and very ambitious for her second son, Jacob. She determined to substitute Jacob for Esau in order to steal the firstborn's blessing. Rebecca was greatly aided in her scheme by the fact that her husband, Isaac, was blind. Now it came to pass, when Isaac was old and his eyes were so dim that he couldn't see, that he calls Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son," and he answered him, "Here I am." Then he said, "Behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now therefore, please, take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and make me savory food such as I love, and bring it to me that I might eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt game and to bring it. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob, her son, saying, "Indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau, your brother, saying, 'Bring me game, make savory food for me, that I may eat and bless you in the presence of Jehovah before my death.' Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice." Blessing, by the way, before death means that he's going to pass his inheritance to him. "Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go now to the flock and bring me from there 2 choice kids of the goats. I will make savory food from them for your father just as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father, that he may eat it, and that he may bless you before his death. And Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth-skinned man. Perhaps my father will feel me and recognize it's not him, and I shall seem to be a deceiver, and shall bring a curse on myself and not a blessing. But his mother said, No, let your curse be upon me, my son. Obey only me and my voice, and go get them for me. And he went, and he got them and brought them to his mother, the goats. His mother made that savory food, such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the choice clothes of her eldest son, Asa, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son, her choice. And she put the skins of the kids of the goats in his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. Then she gave the savory food and the bread, which she had prepared, to hand her son to give to Jacob. So he went to his father and said, My father, he said, Here I am. Who are you, my son? Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I've done just as you told me. Please arise, sit and eat of my game, that your soul may bless me. But Isaac said to his son, How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? And he said, Because Jehovah Elohim brought it to me. Isaac said, Jacob, please come near me that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son, Esau, or not. So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, felt him and said, The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are of Esau. And he did not recognize him, because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. Then he said, Are you really my real son, Esau? And Jacob said, I am. That story had a happy ending because Jehovah intervened, prevents Esau from killing his usurping brother Jacob, or Israel. And all of those who do not believe that the Messiah rose from the dead are spiritually blind. Consequently, they should not be ruling over anybody, because if the blind lead the blind, both shall end up in the pit of hell. Let them alone. The King James Version of the Bible says in St. Matthew 15, verse 14, Let them alone. They are blind leaders of the blind, and if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch. And amazingly, of course, President Bill Clinton claimed that his father, the unreal father, the stepfather, died by falling into a ditch. Pretty incredible, isn't it? Yes. There are some incredible things that happen on this earth that most people have no idea. And the Clinton timeline has everything to do with Arkansas and everything to do with New York State. It was the 50s when Bill Clinton's family first moves to Hope, Arkansas, from that longtime mob resort of Hot Springs, Arizona. And in the 60s, a federal investigation concludes that Hot Springs was the largest illegal gambling operations in the United States. Clinton goes to Georgetown University, where he finds a mentor and Professor Carol Quigley. And Bill Clinton, according to several agency sources, interviewed by the biographer Roger Morris, works as a CIA informer while briefly and erratically a Rhodes Scholar in England, although without visible means of support. Somehow, Bill Clinton actually gets to travel around Europe and the Soviet Union, staying at all the ritziest hotels, And during this period, the U.S. government is using well-educated assets like Clinton as part of an operation they called Operation Chaos, a major attempt to break student resistance to the war and the draft. And according to the former White House FBI agent Gary Aldrich, Clinton is told by Oxford officials that he's no longer welcome there. Bill Clinton and his friend Jim McDougal get a job at the office of Senator William Fulbright. Washington Post later wrote, McDougal was interested in making money while Clinton was obsessed with political stature. So after becoming involved in politics, the Wellesley graduate, Hillary Rodham Rockefeller Clinton, orders her senior thesis sealed from public view. 1969, it starts. Clinton meets the 19-year-old woman in an English bar, has sex with her. She says she's raped. Clinton says it was consensual. And a retired United States Department official will tell the news service Capitol Hill Blue in the late 1990s, there is no doubt in my mind that this woman suffered severe emotional trauma, but we were under tremendous pressure to avoid the embarrassment of having a Rhodes Scholar charged with rape. He said he filed his report to his superiors, and that's the last he ever heard of it. And the victim's family? Well, they declined to pursue the case. Then in 74, Bill's 27 years old now, only months out of Yale School, back in Arkansas, ready to run for Congress. Yeah. And Clinton enjoys a decisive 7-1 advantage in campaign funds over the nearest Democratic competitor. He will spend twice as much as his well-supported grand old party opponent. Yeah. It's the Rockefeller connection, buying their way into power. Oh, there's so much more to the Clintons. I'm going to get as much in as I can tonight before I leave the air. It's Talk Radio AM 640, A View from Space. I'm back in a moment. I'm a guy that calls Space, View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. You can email me at space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. Not a lot of time to spend with you tonight on this particular show, but I'm going to get what I can in. So, Arkansas and New York State. Arkansas, bought by the five billionaire Rockefeller brothers in the Depression. They owned it lock, stock, and barrel. And, of course, their home headquarters that they've owned since John D. Rockefeller in the late 1800s, moved to New York State. Those are the two places where the Clintons rose to power. Now, let me take you back to 1976. Bill Clinton, elected Attorney General of Arkansas, and a couple of Indonesian billionaires come to Arkansas. Mokhtar Riady and Liam Slow. They're close to Suharto. Riady is looking for an American bank to buy. Finds Jackson Stevens, with whom he forms Stevens Finance with. Stevens will broker the arrival of the bank known as BCCI to America and to steer BCCI's founder, Hassan Abedi, to Burt Lance. Riady's teenage son is taken on as an intern by Stevens Incorporated, and he later says he was sponsored by Bill Clinton. In 1977, the very next year, Hillary Clinton joins the Rose Law Firm. Apparently because of pressure from Indonesia, Riady withdrew his bid to buy Lance's 30% share of the National Bank of Georgia. Instead, a BCCI bank frontman buys the shares, and Abidate moves to secretly take over Financial General, later First American Bank shares, later the subject of the only BCCI-connected scandal to be prosecuted in the U.S. The very next year, can you imagine with all that trouble, Bill Clinton is elected governor of Arkansas. And at that time, more than a few Little Rock, Arkansas insiders believe that Hillary Clinton is already having an affair with a man called Vince Foster. Oh, and Bill's brother, Roger, develops a 4-gram-a-day cocaine habit, getting his stuff from New York and Medellin suppliers based on who his brother was. Because, you see, Arkansas was the landing point for a lot of cocaine and a lot of opium coming into the United States of America under the watchful eye of the elected governor, Bill Clinton, 1978. Oh, yeah, there's so much. 1979, a legal secretary will later say that Clinton tries to force her into oral sex. She'll tell Capitol Hill Blue News Service in the 1990s that when she told her boyfriend, who was a lawyer and supporter of Clinton, about the incident, he told her to keep her mouth shut. He said that people who crossed the governor usually regretted it, and that if I knew what was good for me, I'd forget that I ever saw it happening. But his girlfriend said, I haven't forgotten it. You don't forget crude men like that. Charlene Wilson will testify in a 1990 federal drug probe that she began selling coke to Roger Clinton as early as that year, 79. He will also tell reporters that she sold a couple of grams of coke to Clinton's brother, Bill. And then witness Bill consume the drug herself. I watched Bill Clinton lean up against a brick wall, she said. He was so messed up that night, he slid down the wall into a garbage can and just sat there like a complete idiot. And there were many other times, too, where the Little Rock's Coachman Inn workers between 79 and 81 said they saw, we saw Clinton using coke all the time with his friends. 1980s, according to later sworn testimony by Arkansas trooper Larry Patterson, Governor Clinton has oral sex with a woman in a car parked outside Chelsea Clinton's elementary school. So Governor Bill Clinton appoints Webb Hubble to head a new state ethics commission. First task? To weaken ethics legislation currently under consideration by exempting the governor from some of its more rigorous provisions. So Arkansas becomes a major center of gun running, drugs, money laundering. And the IRS actually even warned other law enforcement agencies of that state's enticing climate. According to Bill Clinton, Clinton's biographer, Roger Morris, operatives go into banks with duffel bags full of cash, which bank officers then distribute to tellers in sums of under $10,000 so they don't have to report the transaction. It's absolutely astounding, isn't it? Yeah. Mena, Arkansas. a drug haven. And according to one person, a man by the name of Doug Wilson, I lived in Little Rock, Arkansas. Okay. And I worked at a club called Le Bistro's. And I met Roger Clinton there, Governor Bill Clinton there, a couple of his state troopers that went with them wherever they went. And Roger Clinton had come up to me and he asked me if I could give him some coke, you know, and asked me for my one-hitter, which a one-hitter is a very small silver device, okay, that you stick up into your nose and you just squeeze it and sort of snort the cocaine. It goes right up your nose. I watched Roger hand what I had given him to his brother, Governor Bill Clinton. And he just kind of took a sniff and turned around and walked off. A couple of Arkansas state troopers will swear under oath that they have seen Clinton under the influence of drugs when he was governor. Charlene Wilson, the bartender, ended up serving them on drug crimes and cooperating with drug investigators. She told a federal grand jury that she saw Clinton and his younger brother snort coke together constantly in that year, 79. Yeah, Vince Foster, the one that Hillary Rodham was having an affair with, according to his wife, Vince Foster's wife, security operative Jerry Parks delivers large sums of money from Mena Airport to Vince Foster at a Kmart parking lot. Ms. Parks discovers this when she opens her car trunk one day and finds so much cash that she has to sit on the trunk to close it again. She asks her husband whether he is dealing in drugs or not, and he allegedly explains that, well, Vince Foster paid him $1,000 for each trip that he took to Mena, Arkansas. Parks said he didn't know what they were doing, and he didn't want to even know or care. He told me, forget what I had just seen. Later, Evans Pritchett will write, Foster was using him as a kind of operative to collect sensitive information on things and do sensitive jobs. Some of this appears to have been done on behalf of Hillary Clinton. Foster told him that Hillary wanted it done. Now, my understanding is that she wanted to know how vulnerable he would be in a presidential race on the question of, how shall I put it, his appetites. Hillary Clinton quietly lobbies on behalf of the Contras, rebels in South America, and again, groups and individuals opposing them. Dan Lassiter's parties become known around Little Rock, Arkansas, for the availability of cocaine and lots of women. And according to Roger Clinton's landlady, Jane Parks, Bill was a frequent visitor to the apartment, which shared a wall with her office. And she notes drug use and young girls at gatherings that Bill Clinton attended all the time. And then there's the death. The violent deaths. Vince Foster, one of them. More when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. It's The Spaceman. I'm the guy to call Space. It's a view from space on Talk Radio, AM 640. Tonight's show, the Clintons, Bill, Hillary, Rodham Clinton. Both, I believe, fathered by the Rockefellers. Two of the five billionaire Rockefeller brothers have carefully placed these people in very, very, very powerful positions to, of course, exercise control. Nothing better than family members. Nothing is thicker than blood. So Vince Foster, one of those people, on the long body count, Clinton body count as they call it. Yeah, it even has a name. Because it happens so frequently. So as I was telling you about The landlady, Jane Parks, Roger Clinton's landlady, Bill Clinton's brother, where Bill Clinton frequently came over to Roger's apartment. And Jane Parks had an office right next to a shared wall with that apartment and knew all of the goings-on, of course. Judy Gibbs turned up a lot at that apartment. She was a model and a call girl who appeared in Penthouse magazine, as a matter of fact. Runs a powerful prostitution house in Fortis with her sister Sharon in those days. They also blackmail the powerful clients. When they get something on them, you see, they take pictures of them while they're having sex. Oh, you don't hear the Illuminati-controlled mass media talk about this stuff. Because, you see, it's the truth. Both her family and one of Clinton's bodyguards will later link Judy Gibbs to the governor, Bill Clinton, of Arkansas. She decides to cooperate with police in an investigation on Arkansas cocaine trafficking, but is burned to death inside of her home from a fire of undetermined origin. In 1999, Newsmax reported former Clinton bodyguard Barry Spivey had become something of a mystery man who insisted on meeting Rick Lambert, the Paula Jones investigator, on a deserted road nestled deep in the Arkansas backwoods. The Jones investigator admitted that he was none too comfortable with the situation. Spivey shared a story about a conversation he had with Bill Clinton while on a flight over southeast Arkansas. The trooper notices then a blackened patch amidst the greenery below that, surprisingly, Clinton recognized. That patch was all that was left of an estate that had been burned to the ground in the mid-80s. According to the trooper, Bill Clinton began reminiscing about the rumors of his involvement with the woman of that particular house and one-time penthouse pet. Her husband, Spivey, said, was involved in a pornography ring. Clinton explained to Spivey, "You know that mansion just burned down right on top of them?" Years later, Spivey remained struck by one thing, and that one thing was the eerie expression that crossed Bill Clinton's face as he spoke those words. Now, the sudden and or violent deaths of persons connected in some way to the Clinton machine are way over the top. Since most of these deaths have been at best shoddily investigated by public officials, the Rockefeller connection again, the cults connection again, because they are living in the world of witchcraft, of Satanism, that has very much power. And it's impossible really to determine which of the result of foul play and which are coincidental. But Barbara Wise is a case in point. This woman, whose partially nude body was found in the Commerce Department, have been described by some as being a highly disturbed person whose death may be totally unrelated to the Clinton scandals. Similarly, according to some news reports, a business figure, perhaps with intelligence ties, canceled at the last minute his seat on the ill-fated Ron Brown plane crash. This same businessman later died in the crash of TWA 800. They'll get you if they want to get you. Coincidence? Or is that an unsolved mystery? I would say it is an unsolved mystery. In cases of foul play, you can't leap to conclusions as a motivation to nail potential perpetrators. But if Vince Foster was killed rather than what they said was that he committed suicide, it may have been that he didn't pay off his drug debt? According to her later allegations, Juanita Broderick, a volunteer of Clinton's gubernatorial campaign, is raped by Bill Clinton and her lip almost bitten off. Hospital nurses report that this incident as a rape, but the report along with the photos have since disappeared. And according to Roger Morris in Partners in Power, a young woman lawyer in Little Rock will later claim that she was accosted by Bill Clinton. When she recoiled, he forced himself on her, biting her and bruising her. Deeply affected by that assault, this woman decides to keep it all quiet for the sake of her own hard-won career and that of her husband. When the husband later saw Clinton at the 1980 Democratic Convention, the story goes, he delivers a warning to Bill. If you ever approach her again, he told Bill Clinton, I'll kill you. Not even seeing fit to deny the incident, Bill Clinton sheepishly apologized and duly promised never to bother her again. Yes, pretty sickening when you reveal the truth on these people in positions of power. So now, the Monica Lewinsky sex act in the Oval Office is now just like it's like a joke compared to what was really happening with the drugs, the power, and the fact that these people that are vying for power on one of the most powerful positions in the world, the leader of the free world, the President of the United States, are into money laundering, drug trafficking, murder, taking down leaders of countries and installing their choices. Now, the thing that really, really, really irks me personally is the fact that how could someone in such an incredible position of power have all of these things that everyone knows now is probably true still get to hold their position? Hillary Clinton. Case in point, a Nelson Rockefeller daughter, bastard child. That's why she got off with the FBI, with her emails, and Benghazi. She left those people out there to die. She abandoned them. But you'll never find that incriminating in evidence. So the body count is just horrendous. How could it possibly be that nothing sticks? Like Teflon, nothing sticks to the Clintons. You don't know their names. The bodyguards. All Bill Clinton bodyguards. There were four. Steve Willis, Robert Williams, Conway LeBoux, Todd McKeon. Now you know them. They were executed mafia style. A gun pointed at their temple, the trigger pulled. Where? Waco, Texas. At the assault on the Branch Davidian stronghold. All four were examined by a private doctor and died from nearly identical wounds to the left temple. That's the execution style. what really went down, according to Linda Thompson, next when I come back from break on Talk Radio AM 640 at Waco, Texas, and that Branch Davidian standoff with Clinton as president. Back in a moment. I'm the guy to call Space. It's View from Space. Talk Radio AM 640. I communicate by email only. Space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. MT writes, hey, Space, I just tuned in, but I'm curious about this latest attack in New York City tonight, where they're calling it the Chelsea Blast. Wow, the device was found at 27th Street. This crap is unreal. Yeah, the magical number 9 working right there. And, of course, Chelsea is the bloodline member of the Rockefeller clan because she is the only child of Bill and Hillary Rodham Rockefeller Clinton. So I was talking about Steve Wills, Robert Williams, Conway LeBoux, Todd McKeon, all Bill Clinton bodyguards. Died February 28th, 1993 at Waco, Texas, with the assault at the Branch Davidians. Yeah, we're just after Branch Davidians, you know. No, there was a cover-up here, and they got rid of some people who knew too much. All four, as I said before the break, examined by a private doctor, were these bodyguards for Clinton. According to Lynn Thompson, videotapes and other evidence indicates that none died from guns fired by Branch Davidians. In his address to employees at the Treasury Department in the cash room on March 18, 1993, President Bill Clinton said, "My prayers, and I'm sure yours, are still with the families of all four of the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms agents who were killed in Waco, Todd McKeon, Conway LeBeau of New Orleans, Steve Willis of Houston, and Robert Williams from my hometown of Little Rock, Arkansas. Three of those four were assigned to my security during the course of the primary or general election. However, the Little Rock, Arkansas office of the ATF confirmed that all four had at one point been bodyguards for Bill Clinton, three while he was campaigning for president and while he had been governor of Arkansas. In the video by the American Justice Federation, Waco 2, The Big Lie Continues, Linda Thompson demonstrates that 15 shots were fired from six separate weapons into and out of a room into which three of those four agents had entered through a window. Four of those shots were fired from an overhead helicopter. An agent outside the window firing an MP5 submachine gun, who also threw in a concussion grenade, fired at least two shots into the room. In the autopsies of these agents, three of the four had virtually identical wounds to the left temple that exited through the rear of the head. Execution style. Oh, and a private physician treated all four. Oh, the list of the Clinton body count goes on and on and on. Here's just a few of the time that I have left. Don Adams died January 7, 1997. Long before Whitewater's land flips made the Clinton circle of friends rich, many of those same players had been involved in a similar land swindle in Branson. Don Adams was a lawyer, you see, in Arkansas, who got involved trying to help the people who were being swindled out of their life savings. John Ash is a former United Nations General Assembly president, died June 22nd this year. Initially reported as having died from a heart attack, John's throat had obviously been crushed. At that point, the official story changes to him accidentally dropping a barbell on his own throat, the plot line from the episode An Exercise in Fatality from the television series Columbo, crushing his larynx. Ash was about to begin a trial, you see, for a bribery charge involving a Chinese businessman, Ning Lapseng, who had been implicated but not charged in the 1996 Chinagate scandal for funneling illegal donations to Bill Clinton's re-election campaign fund through Arkansas restaurant owner Charles Tree. Ash was supposedly going to testify about Hillary's links to the Chinese businessman Ning Lapseng. Later that same day, he died. Bob Bates, Barry Seal's aircraft mechanic at Mena in Arkansas, died March 29, 1995. Bob Bates supposedly died of an overdose of mouthwash, seen by the locals as an obvious homicide, but was never, ever investigated. Gandhi Baugh, an attorney representing Mr. Lassiter in a case concerning alleged financial misconduct, died January 8, 1994. An alleged suicide again by jumping out of a window of a multi-story building. Lassiter was a close associate of Bill Clinton, who was then governor of Arkansas, and later indicted on drug-related charges, among other things. Baugh's law partner was suicided 1 month later, too, by the way, on February 9th, 1994. Well, shut them up, won't it? About where the real power and the real drug money was going. Admiral Jerry Burda, chief of naval operations, died May 16, 1996. Explanations for Burda's suicide again focused on a claim that he was embarrassed over two Valor pins he was not authorized to wear. Pretty weak, isn't it? When it turned out that Burda was entitled to those decorations, blame shifts to stresses over the downsizing of the Navy. And that's why he killed himself now. It wasn't about those Valor pins, they straightened that out. The adverse effect that feminism was having on the Navy's morale, too, was another thing that was bothering Admiral Jeremy Burda, it was said. Burda supposedly left suicide notes, two of them. Neither of them were released, because they may not even have existed. Thursday, June 25, 1998. Navy Secretary John Dalton formally acknowledged that Burda had been entitled to wear the decorations of his Valor pins. So like Brown and like Foster, the proximate cause for the suicide turns out to be a fraud. Ron Brown, former chairman of the Democratic National Party, Commerce Secretary, died May 3, 1996. Died along with 39 others when the T-43, a converted 737 used by the Air Force, carrying a group on a trip to Bosnia, crashed while approaching the Dubrovnik airport. On the verge of being indicted and having stated publicly his willingness to make a deal with prosecutors, Ron Brown's death brought to an end his ability to testify. The very next day, Ron Brown's personal lawyer was murdered in a drive-by shooting. A few days later, the air traffic controller who had been in charge during the aircraft crash was found dead himself. And that was declared suicide again. On leaving Ron Brown's funeral, the then president, Bill Clinton, seen laughing and joking. Oh, that is until he saw the camera. And then he went into his sad act. James Bunch, an influential Texan, exact date of death unknown, died from a gunshot, suicide again, similar to Vince Foster, was discovered to have a little black book containing the names of many influential persons in Texas and Arkansas who visited certain prostitutes. You can imagine Bill Clinton's name be on top of that list. Eric Butera, court witness, died December 4th, 1997, and an informant who came forward offering information regarding the murder of the White House intern Mary Mahoney. He was then sent into a known crack house to make an undercover buy for the police. And guess what? What happened when he got there? He was beaten to death in that house. Went into a crack house to make an undercover buy for the cops. He was set up. His mother awarded $100 million in compensation. But the federal judge later slashed it, probably because a Rockefeller picked up the phone. And it was slashed, that $100 million, slashed to just $1 million. But look at the kind of cash they can pay out and cover something up. Gaetano Carani, witness to a shooting near the White House, died November 11, 1994, suffered an unknown infection just before he was ready to testify. Death attributed to apparent food poisoning. Well, at least they're not saying it was suicide this time. They're getting a little more creative. Danny Casolaro, journalist, died August 10, 1991. Casolaro was working on a project he called the Octopus. He started his investigation over the Justice Department's theft of a software package called Promise from a company called Insula. That's a law enforcement database system that includes a feature unique for the time. It was a module that could be programmed to automatically assess and break into other databases in order to present to the user a single picture of financial transactions or suspects from multiple sources. This made a powerful spying tool, didn't it? More when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. Tonight I'm showcasing the Clinton body count. Was the last time you heard something like that on the Illuminati-controlled mass media? Well, you never have, because you're not going to find the truth there. So I was talking about Danny Casolaro before the break, a journalist who was working on a story. Because there was this investigation he was doing about the United States Justice Department's theft of a software package called Promise, P-R-O-M-I-S. I'm sure you've heard of it, from a company called Insula. Promise stands for Prosecutor's Management Information System. And it's really a law enforcement database system that includes a unique feature. And that's a module that can be programmed to automatically access other databases in order to present to the user a single picture of financial transactions, say maybe even suspects from multiple sources. This made it a powerful spying tool, and the U.S. modified their version of it, all right, to include a backdoor. Then made gifts of this software, this Promise software, to other governments. All this was happening at the same exact time as the CIA's clandestine gun and drug running operation to supply the Nicaraguan Contras with untraceable weapons from the United States. A totally illegal operation which violated the Boland Amendment and the Logan Act. The U.S. end of the smuggling pipeline was located in where? Do you guess? Arkansas. MENA, Arkansas. Under the protection of the then governor, Bill Clinton. The arming of the Contras was funded by smuggling vast quantities of coke into the United States. Violation of the drug laws, of course, and then laundered through various banks, Rockefeller banks, land flips also, and state agency, the Arkansas Development Finance Authority, created by Webster Hubbell and signed into law by Bill Clinton, the governor. So Casolaro apparently stumbles over the existence of this vast network of government operatives and politicians all linked together with this incredible amount of wealth acquired from the selling of CIA cocaine in the U.S. and was working on a book exposing the government-sanctioned drug-running scheme when he was found in a bathtub in a hotel room, his wrists both slashed in a manner that a pathologist declared did not appear to have been done by Danny himself. In particular, the deep cuts severed the tendons of the fingers, which would have made it impossible for Danny to slash his other wrist. Once he had cut one of the tendons, or one of the arms of the fingers of the tendons, you couldn't possibly cut the other. You would have no control of your fingers anymore. Despite this, the official verdict? Suicide. Although none of Danny's friends and families believe it, of course, especially those who had been direct witnesses to the many death threats he had received, when found the large accordion of file notes, too, for his book about the promised software, disappeared from his hotel room. Buddha Casares, human rights activist, died March 3rd, 2016. Yeah, just this past spring. Killed while she was sleeping in her home in La Esperanza, Honduras. Buddha Casares had named Hillary Clinton as responsible for the Honduran coup, which toppled democratically elected President Manuel Zelaya. Since the coup, Honduras has become one of the most violent places in the world. Growing awareness of Hillary's role in Honduras became a serious liability during Hillary's campaign. This presidential campaign she's involved in right now. William Colby, another Clinton body count member. You know, William Colby, director of the Central Intelligence, the CIA, for a while, died April 27, we think, 1996. William Colby had been the DCI, the Director of Central Intelligence, from 73 to 76 under Nixon and Ford. At 76 years old, Colby had found a new career, just started writing for Strategic Investment at the time of his death. This worried a lot of people that were, well, on the inside in the intelligence community, who felt that William Colby had already divulged too many of the CIA secrets in preceding years. So his dismissal by Ford because of his over-cooperation with congressional investigators into the CIA wrongdoing, it was Colby who had revealed to Congress that the plans to kill Fidel Castro, spying on the American citizens in direct violation of the CIA charter, and conducting biological tests on unsuspecting citizens, was replaced with George Herbert Walker Bush as the head of the CIA. According to the original CNN report, Colby was reportedly missing by neighbors who received his, recovered his canoe. And one story has it that from under the dock at Colby's house was the canoe. By another report, a quarter of a mile downstream was where they found Colby's canoe, not far from his home. Colby was, by all reports, a methodical, tidy man. Yet police found his home unlocked, his computer still on, apparently eating dinner on the table. The official story is that William Colby just put down his fork while eating a meal and decided to drop everything and go canoeing. Colby had a lot of old enemies as well, with plenty of motives for his extermination, of course. He was in charge of the infamous Operation Phoenix during the Vietnam War, in which more than 20,000 South Vietnamese citizens, supposedly Viet Cong sympathizers, were rounded up, tortured, and summarily executed. In the 1970s, he opened some of the secrets of the CIA to Congress. Colby insisted on going public about the agency's role in tapping the telephones and the opening of a mail of American citizens. Also, he insisted on going public with the plotting of the assassination of Fidel Castro, and the using of human guinea pigs for mind control experiments. That was reported by the Times. Now, May 6th, Colby's body is found just 20 yards from where his canoe had been recovered, in an area that had been thoroughly searched several times by helicopters and search teams. Most notable about the body was the absence of a life jacket, which, according to Colby's wife, he always wore on the water, as has since been proven to have happened in the JFK Jr. case. False stories being deliberately planted in the media, too, including one quoting Mrs. Colby herself as having been told by William Colby by phone that he was going canoeing. Mrs. Colby denied any such story. The week that he died, Colby was scheduled to meet with the Disclosure Project. Susan Coleman is also on the Clinton body count list. Had an affair with Bill when he was Attorney General of Arkansas. She died February 15, 1977. Suicide again. Gunshot wound to the back of her head. No autopsy allowed. 7 months pregnant at the time of her death, too. And she told all her friends, of course, it was Bill Clinton's child. She was just 26 when she died. Five Navy aviators, Clinton bodyguard escorts, all died in a crash together. It was an E-2C Hawkeye in Italy. The crash occurred shortly after the plane was waved off from a landing attempt at the carrier Roosevelt, on the carrier Roosevelt out at sea, due to a foul deck. All five men had been Clinton's escorts during Clinton's visit to the Roosevelt a couple of weeks prior to hotel. Three other men who had flown Clinton to the Roosevelt for that visit also died later in a helicopter crash. Herschel Friday, attorney and Clinton fundraiser, died March 1, 1994, killed when his plane exploded. Causes unknown. And Aldo Fransoccia, Secret Service agent, Captain Kevin Ernest, aircraft commander, Captain Kimberly Joe Wheelhuer, pilot, and Second Lieutenant Benjamin Hall, navigator, along with the loadmaster, Michael Smith Jr., the flight engineer, Rick Merritt, loadmaster, Michael York, the crew chief, Billy Ogston, all died August 18th, 1996. Killed when the C-130 aircraft carrying the presidential limos crashed near Jackson Hole, Wyoming. All nine aboard. A White House support plane. Killed. Space back with more on Talk Radio, AM 640. More next. The guy they call Space, it's View from Space on Talk Radio, AM 640. Thank you so much for the emails tonight. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much. A little bit of a different feel tonight with a shortened show and a surprising start time. But thank you so much for the one that you've sent. So here's another victim in the Clinton body count, as they call it. Kathy Ferguson, she was a witness, died May 10th, 1994. Kathy Ferguson supposedly committed suicide May 10th, 1994, when she shot herself in her living room. Kathy's ex-husband was Danny Ferguson, who was the Arkansas trooper who said he escorted Paula Jones to Bill Clinton's hotel room. Kathy often told friends and coworkers about how Bill had gotten Danny, her husband, to bring women to him and stand and watch while they had sex. Danny Ferguson was a co-defendant along with Bill Clinton in Paula Jones' sexual harassment suit, too. Kathy Ferguson was a corroborating witness for Mrs. Jones. Oddly, next to Kathy's body were their packed bags, as if she was expected to be going somewhere. Another victim of the Clinton body count, Dwayne Garrett, radio show host, Al Gore fundraiser, died July 26, 1995. He was a lawyer, as well as having a radio show in San Francisco. Dwayne was the campaign finance chairman for Dianne Feinstein's run for the Senate, and was a friend and fundraiser for Al Gore. And according to Garrett's lawyer, Garrett was under investigation for defrauding investors in Garrett's failed sports memorabilia venture. There was talk of a deal to evade prosecution. And on July 26th, Garrett cancels an afternoon meeting with his lawyer because he had to meet some people in the San Francisco airport. 3 hours later, he's found floating in the bay under the Golden Gate Bridge. Now, Judy Gibbs, the penthouse model I talked about in Call Girl earlier, died January 3rd, 1986. Judy, along with her sister Sharon, appeared in the December 1979 issue of Penthouse magazine and later worked at a bordello in Fortis near Mena, Arkansas, which also ran a blackmail operation with photos taken of the customers with their girls. And according to the Gibbs family, Bill Clinton was a regular customer of Judy's, and there were photos of him having sex with her that threatened his presidential campaign. While cooperating with law enforcement in a drug investigation, Judy died when her house burned down. No cause of the fire ever found. Judy was still cognizant enough to call the fire department to report the fire, but her body was found on the floor in front of a ground floor window near a door that would have easily allowed her to escape the burning building. But for some reason, she didn't escape. In a sworn statement, Clinton bodyguard Barry Spivey, now dead, related how he had been with the governor when the governor's plane had flown over Judy Gibbs' house and Clinton had shown Judy's penthouse photos on the plane and pointed out the house to her. Michael Hastings, journalist for Rolling Stone magazine, died 2013, June 18th. Mike Hastings died in a highly suspicious single car accident. He told friends that he was afraid for his life following stories he had written which were critical of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. One of the emails leaked during the 2016 Democratic Convention actually confirmed that Hillary had received Hastings' damning investigative report on the attack on the Benghazi consulate 5 months before his death. Stanley Hurd, chairman of the National Chiropractic Health Care Advisory Committee, and Steve Dixon, lawyer for his lawyer, both died on the Clinton body count list. Both died September 10, 1993, plane crash outside Dulles Airport. After the aircraft, rented after Hurd's personal craft, developed troubles, crashed while attempting an emergency landing after reporting a fire on board. They took off in a plane. It develops problems. They bring it back to the airport. They rent another plane. They took off in it, in their newly rented plane, and it developed a problem too. On the way back to the airport, it crashes. The lawyer Hurd in addition to serving on Clinton's advisory council, also personally treated Clinton's mother, stepfather, and brother. John Hillier, NBC freelance cameraman's on the list. He died in 1996. Hillier passed away in a dentist's office from unknown causes, despite being very healthy and in good physical condition, declared a heart attack. We're working on an investigation into Mena, Arkansas, and assisted with the Circle of Power and the Clinton Chronicles episodes. Some time after his death, his widow recalled her husband saying that he felt that he could have been in danger while he was doing the Circle of Power and the Clinton Chronicles expose. Pretty incredible, isn't it? Let me do a couple of more. Kevin Ives and Don Henry, witnesses, died August 23rd, 1987. Initial cause of death claimed to be the result of passing out on a railway track in Arkansas after smoking 20 marijuana reefers. This ruling was reported by the state medical examiner, Fahmy Malak, and supported by Sheriff Jim Steele, whose thorough investigation of the crime scene left one of the boys' feet sitting in the open for a couple of days. In April 88, Kevin's body was exhumed and another autopsy performed, this one by Atlanta examiner Joseph Burton, who discovered that Kevin died from a crushed skull prior to being placed on those tracks. And how about this one? John F. Kennedy Jr., potential candidate, getting set to run for the Senate seat in New York, occupied by one Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, the youngest son, the little boy that waved the little flag when JFK's body was being taken to Arlington Cemetery, and everybody saw that little boy as his father's replacement one day when he grew up. Well, he had grown up, and he was ready to jump into politics and become the senator from New York. Died July 16, 1999, within days of an NBC Dateline story hinting at a possible run for the Senate in New York State, the property of Hillary Clinton. JFK and his wife and his sister-in-law die when their Piper Saratoga II, their TC aircraft that JFK was Jr. was piloting, crashed into the ocean just short of Martha's Vineyard, where they were headed, the holiday area for the Kennedy family. The Newsweek issue following Monday with NBC's Dateline reported that JFK was going to announce his candidacy, but was yanked from distributors and destroyed. Even before the wreckage of the plane had not been found, the media was saturated with news stories declaring the weather to have been very hazy, 8-mile visibility, plus weather radar and witnesses on Martha's Vineyard all reported clear skies, making it impossible for JFK Jr. to know which was up and which was down in the aircraft, because he also had instruments in the aircraft that were tampered with, as was the case when TWA 800 was shot down. The United States Navy took control of the crash site, ordering an unprecedented 5-mile-wide no-fly zone while the wreckage of the aircraft was recovered and taken to a military base. Reporters Cindy Adams, Andrew Goldman, have documented the planting of the false information about JFK Jr. in the media in the days following the crash, the feeding of false information into the Illuminati-controlled mass media proves there was a cover-up. The existence of a cover-up is why JFK Jr. gets an entry on the dead bodies list of the Clinton body count. Oh, one more thing. According to some reports, Mrs. Kennedy was pregnant when that aircraft went down. So you tell me, and I haven't even got halfway through. Not even halfway through. The Clinton body count victims. And all the documented stories that go along with it. And it's still happening. It happened in 2016. A lawyer for Assange, Julian Assange, dead. Well, what? He knew. But I have no time to get into all of the other cases that are as riveting as the ones I've already shown you. This has been A View from Space. That's all it is. Talk Radio AM 640 Coast to Coast is next. I'm Space and I'm out.